still have a round to play, but Sale's European adventure came to an end on Friday night as the Sharks were defeated 30 points to 23 by La Rochelle. The result means Sale are now bottom of their pool and officially incapable of progressing to the competition's knockout rounds. However, Glasgow's draw with Exeter on Saturday means that places 2 through 4 in Pool 2 are all still to play for ahead of Glasgow's visits to the AJ Bell next week. My name is Lewis, welcome back to the Shark Tank, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by my co-host Alex. Alex, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, mate. Slightly disappointed about the result on Friday, but I think a lot of signs of encouragement in it as well in patches. So yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Much in the same way. It's hard to get too upset about what was kind of a dead rubber or a bit of a shock to nothing. But my sort of overwhelming sense is that what a disappointment, because we've got a podcast that is dedicated to talking about James Williams, also known affectionately as the Thighs, by this podcast. And our good friend James Maley isn't here to enjoy it. What a shame.
It's so true, isn't it? It's the perfect week for him. Yeah, it's a massive shame James can't be here. But we'll talk about the Thighs as much as possible just to make up for it. So I think it'll be all right.
Absolutely. Well, one of the first things I did want to mention from this result, and the fact is that obviously it was a bit of a dead rubber for Sale, not really having much of a chance to qualify before Friday night's game, is that it did give the opportunity for a couple of academy players and you know, squad players to get a chance to make a push for some first team time. And obviously James Williams, an academy signing from Worcester's academy over the summer, got the start at 12. Tom Roebuck got a start on the wing, and then obviously Matt Postlethwaite got a start at lock as well. Alex, you know, how do you think, you know, those three players in particular got on Friday? And do you think that, given the nature of the competition and where we were in it, you know, playing the squad players and playing the academy players was the right approach for Sale to take, given the ultimate result?
Yeah, I think you look at the blend of sort of experience and youth in that team, and what you're giving people there is an opportunity to perform. You know, usually if you put James Williams in at 12 and he had sort of Kieran Wilkinson at 10 and then you have a pack full of academy players, then you're just not going to see the best of them. But I think what you saw on Friday night was that with a decent pack around them and a lot of experience, that actually those players shone. And I thought all three of them, Postlethwaite, Williams and Roebuck, had really, really good games. You know, I think you saw a lot from James Williams. I thought was one of our best players. I just really like the way he plays and the option he gives us at 12. Being a pretty decent ball carrier, good defence, and, you know, obviously having that sort of passing option that you don't get with someone like Rohan. Tom Roebuck looks good. I think obviously a little bit younger. I think a little bit of more development for him, but I'm excited to see where he goes. And then I thought Matt Postlethwaite looks really good. It's the first time I've sort of seen him command the game. You know, at the line-out, he was taking line-outs and sort of running that. And considering he had James Phillips with him, so he didn't have Bryn Evans or Josh Beaumont to fall back on, I think it's a really impressive performance from him in the second row. So, yeah, you know, we talk about all these big signings we've made, but the massive encouragement for me from Friday night is that we've got two academy products there and one academy player. And it shows that we're not just signing big South African bruisers. We have actually got other stuff in reserve, and hopefully that helps the longevity of the club. And, you know, we're bringing through these players. It doesn't just stop at the Curries, and it doesn't just stop when we start signing players. We keep bringing them through. So, yeah, massively encouraging for those three. What were your thoughts on them? Do you have a particular favourite, or do you want to talk about the Thighs a bit more?
Yeah, I mean, any opportunity to talk about the Thighs is obviously welcome. I thought he had a pretty solid game. It's sort of like a mini Rohan, not only in how he was deployed in terms of Sale's attacking shape, but obviously the way he plays, very sort of forward-led carrying in that he kind of runs a bit like Van Rensburg does, sort of with his upper body sort of pressed out, sort of initiate contact and then drive through with his obviously very large legs that we've mentioned a few times. So quite impressed with him, you know, good passing ability. I also quite enjoyed the fact that he was kicking sticks after McGinty went down, and obviously he also took a couple of kicks into touch as well. So obviously kind of a multi-threat player. So that was quite not, sort of nice to see someone that we kind of talked about a little bit, but obviously get a chance to get some game time under him. And obviously that's kind of what Friday night presented as an opportunity. Agree with everything you said about Postlethwaite. I think now is the kind of the time that we want to see him pushing into that first team. Whether, you know, what his ceiling is, I don't know. I don't know if he is going to be, you know, an England international. But sometimes it's all well and good developing loads of international players through your academy. Of course it is. But at the end of the day, if they're going to be, you know, missing for 10 games a season, you need players like Postlethwaite, you need players like Luke James, you need, you know, other players to help supplement the squad. And whilst I didn't necessarily see anything from Postlethwaite to suggest that he's going to be the game-breaking talent that someone like Luke Diago is going to be, I think he looks like he's going to be a really good squad member. And I think there's an inherent value in that, that Sale would be very wise to recognise. You know, similar with someone like James Williams and obviously Tom Roebuck as well, who's kind of the one that a lot of people were looking at when the squad was named. You know, kind of, you know, slightly sexier position playing on the wing. You know, he's obviously someone who's playing age grade rugby for England. Don't think he had, you know, a particularly good game or a particularly bad game one way or the other. Don't think he really got the opportunity to do too much. You know, when he did have the ball, he looked lively. You know, he broke a couple of tackles. I think defensively, you can tell he's still a little bit green, not necessarily getting those reads in terms of our sort of very aggressive defensive structure. You know, to the point where, you know, he could slot into the team seamlessly. But, you know, you got to remember he's 19. I think it's only his third or fourth senior appearance for the club. And I think all three of them did really well. And it showed that there is a lot of potential coming through the squad. And it felt really nice. And I'll see if you agree with me here, Alex, that we had a dead rubber against La Rochelle. You know, we didn't really have anything to play for. And actually, the strength of our squad is such that we went there with probably what you'd call a reserve team. And we still had three very highly touted academy players coming through. We had players in our starting team who are first team regulars who've also come through our academy. And we'd supplemented that with some international stars, the fact that both Dupree has played, the fact McGinty played, the fact Marlon Yard played. You know, these are players who aren't necessarily the first names on the team sheet for Sale at the moment. But we have such a quality caliber of player as our reserves that it means games like La Rochelle on Friday actually mean a little bit more because we could be more competitive in them compared to seasons previous.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice not to send a bunch of kids to Toulon to get beat by 60 points, isn't it? I think you are right. The, you know, the depth in the squad is massive, and what's really, really good about that is that not only are we sort of able to compete, as you say, but we're able to give opportunities to people who can then shine, and we don't have to, you know, push anyone to go too hard. And, you know, we've got enough in the tank that every week we could put out a competitive team and we could change it every week. Obviously, we don't want to, but yeah, it is. I think it's massively encouraging, and it is nice to be competitive in the Champions Cup. And you sort of look at this result and you go, yeah, you know, we lost, but we lost by 7 points away to La Rochelle. It's a tough ask to go to France in January. And we did it with nowhere near our first team. And they performed well. And I think what was encouraging for me is that you saw those attacking structures off the back of the Quinns game. Still looking good. We were still creating space. You know, even their second try when the intercept happens, you know, it's a misplaced pass by Will Cliff. But if it goes over or behind Kerbalo, then we're in, and you know, we're probably scoring. And it was just enjoyable to watch, I think, especially in the first half because we were playing really well. It was really enjoyable to watch us play, and for quite a lot of the time in the season it's been a bit drudgy and a bit hard to watch, so it's nice to sort of, for me, see that Quinns isn't just a flash in the pan, and actually our attacking game is getting going. And hopefully, you know, going back into the Premiership in a couple of weeks' time, we can carry that on against Exeter. So, yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we're seeing a style develop. You know, we've got that rolling ball as a real cornerstone of our game. But then we're seeing us move teams around, get out wide, using that sort of rugby league style dummy runner coming in. So, yeah, massively encouraging for me. And, you know, a disappointing result. But I think it was one we all predicted. So not hugely unexpected.
Yeah, and actually the manner of the result, Sale being dominant in the first half, giving up some costly tries, you know, ultimately losing. If you'd said 30 points to 23 at the beginning of the game, I would have said that's probably a fair reflection of the strength of both teams and the context. The fact that Sale are probably guilty of throwing away this game a little bit is also quite bizarrely encouraging, because it means that actually if we'd had maybe a ever so slightly stronger squad, maybe a few more experienced heads in there, or some of our first team players, you know, it might be a case that we actually would have got away with winning in La Rochelle, which would have been a fantastic result. And so, you know, kind of a strange one, because I think we probably should have won the game in some aspects. I think La Rochelle definitely deserved to win. But overall, a really encouraging performance to take, you know, from what is quite a tough away trip out to La Rochelle. So there's our sort of top line thoughts. We'll do some three word reviews now, just quickly, and kind of get a feel for what other Sale fans thought of the game. Matt Sainsbury, first half mistakes. Pez 1876, Sale fans excellent. I have to second that one. I could hear them, you know, quite audibly whilst watching the game on TV on Friday. Max Boyle, youngsters fronted up. Rod Nisbet, stupid mistakes costly. Richard Higgs, James Williams, fantastic. Dave Baldwin, gave them tries. Rob Manley, need another 10. And Gavin Barber, great trip, thanks, with an exclamation mark. Sounds like everyone had a really good time in La Rochelle over the weekend. Alex, I'll open the floor to you then. You know, where do you sort of want to start with some of those two-word reviews? And is there anything particular from this game that you wanted to pinpoint?
Yeah, I think for me, if we start at the start, first half mistakes, Matt Sainsbury, I completely agree, because realistically we gave away two tries in the first half, which was 12 points in the end, I think, was it? You know, which cost us the game. And I think if we go in at half time 16-0 up, which we probably should have been, or 16-3 up, then maybe we keep hold of that lead in the second half. And it was two complete errors on our half, and you know, it's not even like the first one is just James Phillips throwing it to no one and trying to be a little bit too cute off the back of the mall, I think, which is understandable. You know, our mall play has been really good, so just not executing right in that moment. And then the second one is just Will Clough throwing it straight to Kerbalo, which again is fundamentally a mistake, and he runs in. So I think that was, for me, was sort of the story of the first half. And I think if we'd not given away those tries, we were playing well enough to be 15-20 points up at half time, and then it's completely different second half, isn't it, as it was there. In touch there at home, and therefore they kind of run away with it in the second half.
Absolutely. And I think one thing I wanted to stress for this game is the way La Rochelle played, it was almost Sale-like in that at times this season we've produced some of our best performances where we've not been able to front up at the game line. We know we've been losing dominant collisions. We've not necessarily been able to impose ourselves on the game. And what we've done is adapt tactically, defensively, you know, pick out counter-attacking opportunities and score from them. And that's kind of what La Rochelle did a little bit in that first half, because you're absolutely right, Alex. They absolutely, you know, Sale absolutely dominated. You know, the first sort of 10 minutes is all Sale ball. Both Dupriers were fantastic. You know, having both of them in the back row really gave us game line momentum. There was a lot of, you know, every time we moved the ball out, we had lots of options. We were varied in our attack. You know, La Rochelle looked, you know, a little bit stunned in the sort of first 15, 20 minutes and really struggled to get a foothold on the game. And, you know, we rightly went up, you know, by a try with Jean-Luc Dupree going over from a few yards. You know, McGinty kicks a penalty. When we're starting to pad our lead, and it's only really our mistakes that let La Rochelle back into it, because I've actually got the splits from the first half in front of me. You know, possession-wise, it was 64-36 in Sale's favour. Territory, 74% and 26% again in Sale's favour. You know, so we had all the ball, we had all the territory. I thought McGinty was doing a really good job of managing the game. I think same with Will Clough. And we were dominant everywhere. And then we just kind of, you know, a couple of mistakes, a comedy of errors, some really good counter-attacking play from La Rochelle. And that sort of ultimately led the game in at half time to be a lot closer than it probably should have been. And I don't know, I'll put this to you, you know, is that encouraging that at the half time we should have been further ahead, or is it discouraging that we should have been further ahead and ultimately we kind of gave away two very soft scores and let La Rochelle back into it?
I think you have to take the positive from it, because it's a young team fundamentally, and they will, you know, kind of learn from that and take the lessons from it. And it's happened in a Champions Cup game where we were realistically already out of the group. You know, there are some players in there who you would expect to sort of be able to deal with that that sort of pressure. But then there's a lot of players where you're thinking, you know, you're a young player, just come through the academy or whatever, and it's probably quite good experience for them to have this and think, right, we've played well, but we've given away two really soft tries and we've seen that it's cost us the game. So in future, when we're playing well, we know that we need to not give away soft tries and make the most of our advantage. So I think because of the sort of strength or relative lack of, compared to our first team, of our squad on Friday, I see it as encouraging, because I think we'll learn from it. If it was the team that we're trying to get in the top four with, then I'd be concerned. But it's not, is it? You know, it's very much a second team with some first team dotted through it. So yeah, I think for me, I'm relatively happy. See it as encouraging. What about you?
Kind of a mix of both. I mean, we were so dominant in that first half. That I was really, you know, excited. You know, we won everything. We won every game line collision. You know, we were getting quick ball off the set piece. Everyone was playing really well. We were making the right decisions. Our attacking structure looked good. It was really, really encouraging. And it was ultimately only a couple of mistakes that let La Rochelle back into it. So, you know, first half-wise, very encouraging. Second half, though, and I know you had some connectivity issues, you know, which prevented you from seeing all of it, but it kind of felt like we kind of reached the pinnacle of what this team was capable of, especially with that McGinty injury going off, which I think was really crucial in the outcome of the game. But second half, it kind of felt like the inverse of the first half, and La Rochelle just fronted up so much better. They were dominant in all aspects of the game. You know, their back row really started to make an impact on the breakdown. They were either turning the ball over or slowing it down for Sale in a way that they weren't in the first half. Their set piece ran really well, and they just had lots of options all over the field. And you kind of started to see lack of first team experience and lack of sort of first team legs in the Sale 23, because you got to sort of 55, 60 minutes, and actually La Rochelle, they had a little bit more strength in depth on the bench that they could bring on to sort of accentuate their advantages. We started to look a little bit leggy in the last sort of 25, 30 minutes. And kind of it very slowly, the game started to shift from one that was where Sale were completely dominant into one where La Rochelle actually controlled proceedings and controlled them very well as well. And it did kind of feel that this is a game that did get away from us, especially given our fast start. But it also felt like a game that La Rochelle did deserve to win, just because of how much better they were around the entire park in that second half.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, that's the thing that this season we've been really good at, is using our bench and seeing out games because of the strength of our bench. Whereas what we struggled with on this game is sort of back to the old days when we could just about get out 15 first team players. So, you know, I think that was part of the issue, wasn't it? That when you look at our bench, you know, Langdon came on for 15 minutes, Morozov came on for a minute, as we'll discuss later, Cal Ford for a minute, Dugdale for 10 minutes, Neil for 15. You know, that's our forward reserves, and they've got, what, 30, 40 minutes between the five of them. I think that's part of the issue, isn't it? That we just didn't have enough confidence in our bench to use them. And therefore, we've struggled to sort of use them effectively. And that's probably why La Rochelle got on top in the second half, because it, all credit to our starting pack, who a lot of them have been playing pretty hefty minutes. You know, Harrison, Cooper, Woolley, Phillips, both Dupreez and Ben Curry have all played 80 minutes the other week, didn't they? Or as good as. So, I think this speaks to how important squad depth is now, especially in this competition. And it sort of, it shows that how not ready we were for this competition in the past, and how we will be ready in, you know, maybe a year or two's time when we've got that full squad depth. Because when you've got a team like that, where you just can't trust, or you know, your bench are very, very inexperienced, you're not going to win any games. Whereas when you've got a full squad and a full bench of really good players, then you're going to do all right, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair way of looking at it. And that's why, as we look back on the game, we don't really mind losing, you know, quite comprehensively in the end, you know, away at La Rochelle. Because when that squad was announced, we're like, okay, you know, sensible rotation, squad players, first team players, some academy lads. you know, it was actually still pretty strong and probably on par with some of the teams we've put out, you know, previous years in this competition. It is when you look at the bench, though, as you so rightly say, you know, Langdon, you know, for, you know, has had a handful of start, you know, minutes this year. You know, Ford, Dugdale, you know, single digit senior team appearances, you know, for both of them. Cam Neill, not really played for a couple of years. Gus Watt, Joe Carpenter, new signing from Yorkshire Carnegie's Academy. I think it's his first senior appearance for Sale. A lot of, you know, sort of young blood academy players, and that's kind of where the lack of depth in our team showed, and you kind of saw that in the game, because like we said, you know, we played really well for sort of 50 minutes, and then as the game got to the point where, as you say, you'd start to bring substitutes on to make an impact, we didn't really have that capacity, and we were playing Ross Harrison for 65 minutes and James Phillips for 70, and obviously that's kind of where the game started to get away from us. And obviously it doesn't help either when you have two, you know, sin binnings in the space of a couple of minutes. And the Chris Ashton one, I think, it, you know, is very clear cut. Kerbalo, you know, makes a great break off the back of the ruck and kicks into space, and Ashton clearly comes across to knock him out of his path. Clear yellow card, and obviously an easy 3 points for Ihea West to kick. And then obviously you got the Morozov one a couple of minutes later, and we've both seen it. And Alex, for me, it's a clear red card. I don't think there's any bones about it. What did you make of Morozov sending off, you know, just, you know, a minute after he came on?
Yeah, just foolish, innit? Lost his head. Complete red card in any sort of, you know, even if it wasn't for the new protocols, that would be a red card. But direct contact to the head, you know, if you look at it from a rule book standpoint, it is direct contact to the head, red card. If you look at it from a sort of old rugby fashion style standpoint, it's a stupid thing to do, and fully deserved red card. It was sort of incited by the headlock in the ruck, but you just can't react like that as a professional rugby player. And I think it's one of those that he'll now be banned for a few games, and hopefully that's a sort of lesson to not lose your head in a game of rugby, because, you know, we've got quite a lot of competition across our squad, and you don't want to be losing your place for something silly like that. So, yeah, clear red card for me. I don't know, you know, there's no excuse. You got put in a headlock by someone. Doesn't mean you smash your shoulder into the head, does it? It means you keep your head, you're a professional, and you let the refs deal with it. So, yeah, a stupid red card. Didn't massively affect, I think, the result of the game, but it's just frustrating, isn't it? Because, you know, you've lost a promising player there for two or three games now. So, yeah, if anyone thinks it wasn't a red card, please get in touch and let us know why.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we just spoke about the lack of impact on the bench. You know, Morozov was probably one of the few players that we could bring on and have him play a relatively, you know, relatively similar replacement level for the player that he is, you know, coming on for. I think Harrison's obviously the better loose head, but, you know, Morozov, he's, you know, 25, you know, he's not an academy kid, he's got some first team time under his belt. He's actually looked pretty good when he's been able to stay on the field, obviously. So that was a real shame. You know, I think him and Ashton are probably the only players that we could sort of count on to make a first team, you know, quality impact coming onto the pitch. And obviously he gets himself sent off straight away, and, you know, it's a silly reaction. He lashes out, and yes, it's a yellow card for Lopetti Tamani, the lock who had him in a headlock, but at the end of the day, you just can't react like that. And obviously, even at this point, you know, the game's starting to slip away from Sale, and, you know, the kind of already starting to see La Rochelle, you know, sort of strength, you know, tighten the hold on the game. But obviously, when you're already a man down, to do that, you know, so quickly after coming on, it just really accentuated, you know, Sale's sort of slide, you know, away from the game, and obviously gave La Rochelle such an easy basis on which to kick on and win the game. You know, before we start to sort of look at, you know, key performers and you know, key stats, obviously the other downside of the game, and one that potentially has more ramifications for Sale's season, is obviously the loss of AJ McGinty to what looks like a dislocated shoulder. You know, very apparent straight away from the collision with Lavani Bottia that McGinty had suffered the worst of it. You know, he was down on the pitch for a while, getting a lot of treatment, taken off straight away, and obviously looked quite distressed as well. Immediately after the game, Steve Diamond suggested, you know, it's going to be 3 to 4 months out for McGinty. And as we were discussing off air, that doesn't necessarily rule him out for the rest of the season, because the season is a little bit longer this year. But it does kind of suggest that we are going to be without the services of one of our two starting fly halves, you know, for the bulk of the remainder of the season. Now, how big of a loss do you think that was, not only for the game on Friday, but for Sale's season as a whole?
Yeah, I think we were just talking about sort of bench impact, and the problem with the loss of AJ is that it doesn't give us that quality off the bench that we've had this season. You know, we've not got someone who can come on and be as good as Rob Dupria. With all due respect to our replacement 10 options, you've got Kieran Wilkinson, who's coming back from a long-term injury, and young and not that experienced. Sam James, who's not a 10. So we're sort of... and then I suppose James Williams as well is the other option at 10. So we've got enough. You know, we're not in the position we were a few years ago where we would literally have to play someone who doesn't play 10. But it's just a bit of a shame, because I think we would have been very competitive this season, and whether that has an impact, we're now really reliant on the fitness of Rob Dupria. So, you know, we can still be competitive, but it's a massive loss. And I think, you know, as I say, that having that quality off the bench is so, so important. And losing it is a massive, massive blow. So massive shame. Shame for AJ as well, because I thought he looked really good on Friday night. I thought he was running the game, looked really comfortable with, you know, people around him. He was playing off him well, making good runs. There was the little break he made, which was excellent. So, yeah, just a massive shame. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that sort of impact on our season? Because I think it's a bit of a... It's an unknown until you see Rob Dupria's fitness, isn't it, for me? Because with Rob Dupria, it's fine. But without him, we are back to the dark old days of picking tens out of our hat.
Well, absolutely. You made a really good point about Sam James and having to move him to 10. I think not only does that weaken the options that we have at 10, because obviously we don't have McGinty, but it also takes away from our options at 13 as well. So it has a double effect. Not only, you know, we're playing a player out of position, and we're taking him away from his best position, and it's, you know, that happens to be outside centre, where we don't have a lot of options coming into the year. So I think there's a double pronged effect from in terms of having to move Sam James over to cover McGinty's injury. But it is just such a massive shame, because I'm still, look, everyone knows I'm a bit of an AJ apologist. You know, I'm a big fan of his. He sort of fits the mould of the conventional sort of 10 that I think a team like Sale would really benefit from, especially given the improvements made to our pack this year. And I'm still sort of unsure as to what his absolute ceiling is, because we've seen he can win. He can be a championship-winning fly half, because he did it with Connacht in the Pro 12, as it was then, a couple of seasons ago. And I've always kind of wanted to see what McGinty can do with De Klerk, you know, playing 9, Van Rensburg at 12, you know, a couple of wing options, and, you know, to feed passes and kicks to, and also have a dominant pack in front of him as well. Because I think that, you know, that I've seen enough from McGinty, and the fact he's an 85% goal kicker, which puts him in the upper echelon of goal kickers in not only in the league but in Europe as well, means that I think he could be the driving force behind a very successful Sale team. So I'm personally very disappointed that he's obviously been forced off with such a you know, terrible injury, because I still don't think we've seen the absolute best of him. And I think this was the season where it could all sort of click into place, and he could play with the best possible team around him to help him sort of solidify his place in terms of being a top four caliber fly half. And I think you're absolutely right in that it puts a lot of pressure on Rob Dupria as well, because I think Dupria started the season well. I don't think he's had a blistering start, but I don't think he's been poor either. He's had a couple of good games at 12, and we've been playing McGinty at 10, which kind of speaks to how the Sale hierarchy sort of sees the two players working together in terms of their skill sets. And I think it also puts a lot of onus on his goal kicking, which last week was against Harlequins was very, very good. A couple of weeks before hasn't been great. And it's not fair at all to blame Rob Dupria for the Gloucester game of the opening day of the season. But at the end of the day, he's missed a game-winning kick that you would probably expect a top four fly half to convert. And I think we are obviously in a position where our attacking structure is getting better, but we're still, you know, lagging behind in terms of scoring tries because of a slow start to the season. And that puts even more pressure on your goal kicking and your set piece to score tries when your attacking structure isn't. And there's a good chance we kick on now and we're absolutely fine to score, you know, tries from open play for the rest of the season. But if we revert at any point, you know, to the team that we were at the start of the season, then there's going to be a lot of games that come down to Dupria's kicking. And I think neither Dupria or McGinty have played like world beaters this year. And I think in a lot of ways, Rob Dupree is probably just edging ahead as our first choice fly half. The only area where McGinty has a clear advantage is the goal kicking. And I do wonder whether or not McGinty, with all the players around him, could be just as good in open play as Rob Dupree, whilst also offering an extra sort of 8, 9, 10 points a game off the kicking tee. And that's kind of where, that's kind of my worry as Sale sort of looked the next 3 or 4 months without having the option of rotating between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you are right that Dupree hasn't quite shown this season that he can be that top four level of kicking. You know, in fairness, AJ has never shown it. And Dupree helped us beat Saris and Gloucester last year, home and away, respectively. So I think the potential is there. But yeah, it's just you are right that the AJ at times has shown flashes of genuine promise and really impressive impressive sort of ability to get this team playing, and it's just such a shame that he's out, because, you know, 3 or 4 months is a long time, especially at a pretty crucial part of the season. So yeah, we'll see. You know, talk about individual players. Any other individuals you want to pick out from Sale's team? I guess I know we talked about Postlethwaite, Williams, Roebuck. Anyone else caught your eye on Friday?
From a Sale perspective, a little mini shout out to Marlon Yard, who I thought had very quietly a pretty solid game positionally. Didn't really get a chance to do much with ball in hand, but a lot of people, you know, ourselves included, you know, criticised his defensive reads a little bit since coming back from injury. I thought he had a really good game on Friday, in that we didn't really notice him in the defensive line, and sometimes that's actually, you know, a benefit for a winger, especially who's coming back from an injury. I thought he played pretty well. McGinty, for the first 30 minutes, was one of the best games I think I've seen him play for Sale. Sort of had that sort of very good balance between kicking tactically and obviously keeping ball in hand and getting the ball wide. You know, James Williams, we've mentioned, both Dupree's were fantastic. And, you know, Rob Webber, you know, makes a real difference, you know, really unsung hero, but he makes a big difference to our attacking structure. Less dynamic than Van der Merwe, obviously, but sometimes having Webber picking out lines and attacking the game line does make a big difference. And I think that was key to helping a lot of our attacking flair in the opening half. Did anyone stick out from a Sale perspective on your side, Alex?
No, I agree with all of that. I think, just to add on the Dupree point, I think John Luke's looking back to where we was last season when he was on loan. For me, I think he's just starting to really impact games a lot more, maybe because he was playing at six rather than in the second row. But one of the positives out of this game is that Jean-Luc looks really good at six, but Postlethwaite actually looks good enough at four to compete. So hopefully that allows Jean-Luc to play in the back row, and we see him get back to that level he was at last season. So I know you mentioned him, but I just thought I'd add to that. One other player that I am going to ask you about, Lewis, which I know you've been storing up 5 minutes of pure content for, so I'm going to nip off to the loo probably while I let you loose on this. One of the many All Blacks that seem to pervade this La Rochelle team, I know it's controversial to talk about the opposition, but Tuira Kerbalo, I believe you would like to discuss his performance, even though he scored an intercept try against us, set up the third try and basically won them the game, you big traitor.
Well, I'm glad you set me up so well, Alex, because this is why European clubs go out and sign All Black capped players, because Kerbalo was absolutely the difference on Friday night. And if you're looking for a succinct reason why Sale lost the game and La Rochelle won it, well, I think you've got it in Tuira Kerbalo, who was a deserved man of the match. I think the best way of putting it is he was almost a Clerk-like in his performance, in that sort of talismanic leader in attack, leader in defence role. And what he did really well was not only sort of marshal the La Rochelle defensive line, but obviously he was the ringleader in terms of capitalising on those counter-attacking opportunities in the first half especially that we mentioned. And I actually want to break down, there's four moments in the game that obviously swung it in La Rochelle's favour. And it says a lot that Kerbalo is instrumental in absolutely all of them. The first try, you know, loose pass from Phillips, the ball's on the ground, it gets kicked forward. McGinty, very unluckily, you know, isn't able to gather because it bobbles over his hand. And it falls to Kerbalo, and it's this sort of, you know, vision, and it's decision-making and calmness under pressure He's got about three Sale players chasing him down on the touchline. He slows down, spots Levani Bhatia running a great line, and does this deft little chip over the top that falls straight into Bhatia's hands. They make about 25 yards off the kick. And, you know, Bhatia goes to ground, but obviously at that point, Sale have been turned and the defensive line is retreating, and it's an easy walkover try for Relevu in the corner for La Rochelle a few phases later. You know, the second try is, is obviously an individual bit of brilliance from Curbalo defensively, and again, turning defense into attack. And I mentioned De Klerk because we've seen him do it a few times as well, but, and I mentioned it off the top as well, because it's about how, you know, even after scoring that first try, La Rochelle still on the back foot, still, you know, winning the game, line collisions, moving the ball forward. Well, actually, what we saw for the second try is Curbalo make a great read as Sale was sort of setting up to, finish running the play. You know, Cliff takes the ball off the back. It's a nice loop play with, you know, the Johnny Sexton-esque play. Goes to one of the forwards, pops back to Cliff. And actually, it works perfectly. You know, the La Rochelle defensive line is sucked in. I think we've basically got like a 3-on-1 if we can get the ball wide. And actually, Curbalo does a great job of reading the play, noticing that Cliff is going to get the ball back, and he gets out into the passing lane in front of Cliff. And it actually startles Cliff a little bit. And if Cliff can either hold on to the ball or throw it over Curbalo, then we've got a great attacking opportunity. But actually, the way Curbalo has attacked the line completely throws Cliff off, and he actually ends up avoiding the first runner and throwing it straight to the second receiver. And that means Curbalo gets the ball straight into the breadbasket, and he's able to just run the length of the field and score an easy try. Great defensive read, great marshalling of the defensive line, and spotting an opportunity where it's kind of all or nothing. You know, it's De Klerk-esque, it's Reinach-esque, and it was a massive reason why La Rochelle were able to get an easy 7 points, and obviously kind of highlighted a little gulf in class between Curbalo and Cliff on the night. And again, you know, the third try is all Curbalo again. You know, this is at a point now where La Rochelle are actually in the ascendancy. They're winning the game line collisions. They're the ones playing the territory. They're in the Sale 22. They've got all the momentum behind them. And Curbalo does a great job again, picks the ball up at the back of the ruck. And he spots that Sam James is actually supposed to be guarding the ruck. He stepped out in anticipation of Barlow carrying the ball and then passing it out to, I think it's Duma Ruse, who's starting to make his run at the game line. And what Curbalo does is, in an instant, he stops, speeds up through the gap. Sam James is caught completely flat foot, he doesn't lay a hand on him, and then Curbalo and Dumaru have a 2-on-1, and it's an easy try again for La Rochelle. You know, we talked about defensive, you know, intensity, talked about kicking. You know, sometimes it's the basics that set these players apart, and that was a great bit of scrum half play from Curbalo. That's up there with anything some of the best in the world can do. And then finally is actually the Chris Ashton yellow card. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, but again, it's about having this vision and being able to spot the gaps and spot the opportunities, you know, not only as they develop, but beforehand. You know, Sale are obviously now at a point where they're trailing. It's still quite a close game. They go into contact and lose the ball after, you know, a protracted sort of rucking session. You know, the ball comes out to the back of the ruck on La Rochelle's side. Curbalo picks up the ball again, spots that there's no real guard at the ruck, and just puts in a little kick. You know, it's flat, it's a grubber, it's just deep into the Sale 22, just to put pressure on our cover defence and our transition defence. And actually, he's the physical attributes that he's got, you know, his pace, his foot speed, means he gets straight through the Sale line. Chris Ashton's caught off guard, and he basically has to do what ultimately got him sent off, and that's step in front of him, very obviously, barge Curbalo to the ground and obviously prevent what could have been potentially another try-scoring opportunity. So there's four key moments there that really swung the game in La Rochelle's favour, and they were all came through some individual brilliance from Curbalo, and he was absolutely fantastic on the day. And actually, we mentioned last week about maybe Sale a bit over-reliant on De Klerk and, you know, over-reliant on one or two superstar players. You know, we've seen it time and time again. Those type of players do win your games, and it was a bit disappointing that we couldn't win a game without our star players, but it is interesting that one of the absolute key reasons La Rochelle won on Friday and Sale lost is because Curbalo was a cut above everyone else, and he was instrumental in making these decisive moments in the game happen. that's won the game in the home team's favour. So, you know, there's your 4 or 5 minutes of content. I've wanted to talk about Curbelo at length since Friday evening. He was absolutely fantastic, and I'm hoping that the stats will back that up as well.
I was just about to do the very same linking. Yes, top meter maker in the game, Tarira Curbelo with 92, which is really impressive for a scrum half. Stats this week, as we sort of mentioned off the top, possession and territory sale actually had the better of 53% of both. And generally, there's some quite positive stats in there. You know, we beat 24 defenders to La Rochelle's 26, 11 offloads to La Rochelle's 13. Conceded less penalties, 7 to their 13. So, you know, you're thinking, yeah, actually quite impressive. Line out again, good, 16 out of 17. You can't really sniff at that after the last few weeks. There's some more concerning ones in there. Tackles, 80% tackle success rate. Just to sort of drill down into that. And the players who you know, Sam James missed 4 tackles, James Williams, Tom Robert, Luke James all missed 2, as did Dan DePria and Jean-Luc DePria. So, you know, I think it was more that we didn't have to make that many tackles. We really made 105 and missed 26. So it's sort of not a great defensive performance, but perhaps the nature of the game being quite free running, it probably doesn't help with that. Just for contrast, La Rochelle's tackle success was 86%, 146 tackles made, 24 missed. And then in attack, we made 353 metres off 125 carries and a decent return of 2.82 metres per carry. From our side, you know, the people who particularly impressed, Dan DePria with 19 metres off 12 carries, AJ McGinty 38 metres, despite only being on the field for about 20 minutes, Marlon Yard 38 metres, James Williams 27 metres off 12 carries, really sort of taking that inside centre, bashing up role and running with it. Tom Roebuck 49 metres off 6 carries, Luke James 25 metres off 6 carries, and only 3 of them from kick return, as I always like to caveat with the fullbacks, and Chris Ashton 59 metres off 5 carries. So, you know, some really good performances there in attack. Unfortunately, La Rochelle made 490 metres off less carries than us, so they just sort of ran riot, and I think you see that, you know, with the one-off carries. They were the top 3 carriers in Curbelo, Sinzel, the fullback, and Aldrit. The number 8 had a storming game for them. They were also the top carrier in Aldrit. James Williams was second highest carrier of 12 carries. And then tacklers, they're top 3 with quite a few names I can't pronounce. Sale interest there, Jean-Luc Debrie with 13 and Matt Postlethwaite with 10. So yeah, that was sort of, you know, they're the high level ones. Nothing else massive coming out of the game, really, looking through the stats. It's slightly frustrating that perhaps we had majority of possession territory, just weren't able to convert it. And I think, you know, combination of mistakes, not being able to run the game once AJ was off the field, and La Rochelle just playing better than us fundamentally. You know, we're nearly there. We're competing with them, and you see that by the fact we're lost by 7 points. But when the other team make nearly 500 metres, you're always going to struggle to win a game. So I think probably that quality, as you said, Curbelo and other players, that real international class, and being able to score those tries that they did, probably made the difference on the day. So, you know, not horrendous stats as they sometimes are. Certainly the line-out is encouraging and some individual performances that are really worthy of merit. But overall, just didn't really get going in defence for the game and wasn't incisive enough in attack. So, as we expected, I think, you know, it's a young team. I think the theme of today is optimism, and you know, take the positives out of that. Some really good performances and some really good stats there, and much to work on in the sort of game management side of it. So all good. You know, I think the only other thing coming out of that is that having a big bruiser like James Williams with massive thighs is quite useful. I don't know whether there are any other players with massive thighs on the market at the moment who might be available for us, maybe for next season. Lewis, any thoughts?
I did wonder how you were going to bring this back to our next topic of conversation, which is Nemanja Nadolo, the Fijian winger, who in the last sort of 24, 36 hours has been linked with not just Sale, but a number of Premiership clubs as well. And I, as you were sort of doing your summary of the game, Alex, there, you know, I did think, you know, it's a really fair summary of the game. And we talked a lot about star power, and you do wonder, you know, maybe do you think Sale would have had a better chance of winning that game if we'd had Nemanja Nadolo and his massive thighs either at 13 or on the wing?
I don't know. I still think Kerbalo would have run round him. So no, not for me, but. Yeah, it's a very weird one, isn't it? Let's just address the massive elephant in the room. I don't know why we need another winger. We've got about 17. We're just talking up Tom Roebuck's performance, and you know, we're going to sign a winger when we've already got Yard, Solomon, and McGuigan, Ashton, Roebuck, Reed coming through the academy. Yeah, it's a weird one. What are your thoughts? I mean, obviously, we'd love to see it. It'd be cool to see him on the field, but it feels like a waste of cap to me.
A little bit, and I think that's a really important element that we need to start considering when we are linked with these players, is that we are, for all intents and purposes, a cap team this year, or so we've been led to believe, which means that if you're signing someone like Nadolo, a lot of international prestige coming from Montpellier in France, you know, we'll be obviously on big money, he's a talisman, you know, over in the French game, then there is a possibility that there will be cap casualties as part of it, and the sort of prevailing wisdom would suggest if you were signing Nadolo, you would probably see somebody from the first team on similar money, maybe moved out. The most obvious candidate for that would be someone like Marlon Yard, who's approaching the last year of his contract this year. But as it stands, you know, we saw these rumours break. You know, we tried to do our due diligence on them, and that, sort of our understanding of it is there's no decision that has been made on Yard yet. I think the kind of club are waiting to see how his rehab goes after basically losing a year out of that 3-year contract of injury, and it is a bit of a strange one because you look at Sale's squad and what we're lacking isn't either bruising, you know, backline players, and it's certainly not wingers, and the sort of fit with Nadolo and Sale doesn't really seem to exist. It is interesting, though, that we are being linked to him because as we are to understand it, Nadolo is being kind of forced out from Montpellier because there is an increasing onus on French top 14 clubs from the French Federation of Rugby to, you know, to play their homegrown talent a little bit more and try and, you know, encourage, you know, grassroots development and academy prospects that way. And that means Nadolo might ultimately be a victim of some, you know, sort of squad politics in the French game. And that means that the sort of suggestion, I think it was in the Daily Mail, was that he's kind of looking to the Premiership as his next step, and Sale are one of a number of clubs that are linked with him, like Leicester. And you look at what we need at the moment, you know, probably another lock and maybe another centre. And then you look at what Nadolo offers at this stage of his career, you know, 32, you know, obviously on big money. It does kind of feel like there isn't really a fit there in a way that there might be at another Premiership club. But what is interesting is that we're also kind of getting the sense that Sale potentially view him as being an option at centre rather than wing. And that actually, if Yard does stay at the club, in theory, we could hold all four of our existing wingers. So that's McGuigan, Solomona, Ashton and Yard. And then maybe deploy Nadolo as a centre. So my sort of prevailing thoughts on it is, because we're a cap team, if signing Nadolo means we can't address the bigger issues in our squad, which is, in my opinion, lock and centre, then I don't think it's worth doing. And I think if it also means that we have to lose one of our existing wingers, again, it probably isn't worth doing. But obviously, Nadolo is one of my absolute favourite players. He has been for a long time. He's another goal-kicking option, you know, lest we forget. You know, he kicks for the Fijian national team. He's an absolute monster. You know, he'd have a sort of similar impact to Naya Rivaro has had at Northampton. It'd be absolutely fantastic to see him on the same pitch. And imagine Van Rensburg at 12 and Dolo at 13. That'd be an unstoppable midfield. But I think, you know, as excitable as it is to see us linked with someone like Nadolo, I think, yeah, I kind of have to take a step back and think, this probably doesn't make sense from a fit perspective. It probably doesn't make sense from a financial perspective either. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it would be great if it didn't mean that we'd be losing another player, but I think surely to operate within the cap, we would have to. And you know, I think we said last season, or at the start of this season, with the people who left at the end of last season, the people who brought in, there's not really any sort of people you'd want to move on in this squad anymore, I don't think. I think, you know, there's a lot of good players, a lot of people who have committed to the club for a long time. We seem to be building a really, really good squad. So I wouldn't want to get rid of any of those for the sake of a big name star who's realistically at the end of his career and probably just looking for a bit of a paycheck to get the most out of it. You know, with all due respect to Ndombele, it's a really short career and he needs to get as much money out of it as he can. I just don't see why we're the club that go for him. You know, we need a bit of guile. We can't just have these big runners. And you know, if you're going to have a team where you have Rob Dupree, Van Rensburg, and Ndombele at 10, 12, and 13, there's absolutely zero creativity there. You know, there are three very good players, but they're not going to, you know, you're missing that Sam James style, that AJ McGinty, you know. So I think, it doesn't work, and I agree with you. I think it seems an odd signing, especially when there's other clubs better placed. You know, there's talk of Johnny May leaving Leicester, so there's a gap there, certainly, for him to go to. So in the nicest way possible, I hope he doesn't come, because as much as he's a brilliant player and I'd love to see him in a sale shirt, there are lots of players I'd love to see in a sale shirt, but the rules of the salary cap mean that we can't, you know, and you don't want it to turn into the sort of football style where, you know, people just sign big name stars for money and it all gets a bit out of control. So I think we're on the same page on this one. It would be great in theory, and it would have been great 5 years ago, but now we're spending up to the cap. I just don't think it's feasible, and I don't like the potential outcomes if it does happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And should point out as well, James has messaged us, you know, specifically to mention Ndombele and his thoughts. And obviously he's, you know, very academy orientated. And so it's no surprise that the first thing he says is, well, we've got Reed and Roebuck coming through, so why would we need Ndombele? I think that's a little bit generous to where Reed and Roebuck are in their development at the moment. But it's a very good point. You know, Solomon and Yard are 26 and 27. You know, Byron McGuigan, you know, is having a great season. Ashton's, you know, still got a year left. And we do have, you know, Reed and Roebuck coming through. And these are all James's thoughts. And what he's suggesting there is that Ndombele would obviously be, you know, an exciting signing, but there isn't that fit there in the squad, either from a current player perspective or an academy player perspective. And if he's coming in as a centre, well, James isn't necessarily sure he has that decision-making skill set in attack or defence, you know, to really sort of get the best out of him. And yeah, he has played a little bit of 13 for Fiji in the past, but I think there's obviously very different demands for when you're playing as part of Premiership rugby. And obviously a lot more will be expected of you in a probably slightly more rigorously defined structure than Fiji, where obviously Ndombele, for a long time of his international career, was obviously one of their driving forces and was kind of their offensive playmaker to kind of do with as he needed. Obviously, and James's final point was that you can see the carrying option, you know, wherever he plays, which is, you know, a big benefit when there's no Van Rensburg in the squad. But it kind of, like you said, it kind of feels like we're all in agreement that Ndombele, as exciting as he'd be, probably isn't the most wise signing for sale at this point, given the salary cap position and other needs in the squad. So whether or not Sale ultimately signed Ndombele, he won't be available for Sale's next game, which is the final game of our Champions Cup adventure this year, and that's at home to Glasgow on Saturday at 5:30. Alex, I mentioned off the top, it is a bit of a dead rubber. You know, Sale can't qualify for the knockout rounds, but they could still finish second. So just to quickly run down pool two in this year's competition. Exeter, 22 points, you know, clear pool winners. Glasgow second on 12 points, La Rochelle third on 10 points, and Sale fourth on 7 points. I've already run the math on this one. If Sale win with a try bonus point and Glasgow get no match points, Sale would actually finish, and Exeter beat La Rochelle, of course, Sale would finish second above Glasgow based on the number of match points they've won against Glasgow this year, having got a losing bonus point at Scotstoun earlier in the season, which would put us on 6 for the tournament versus Glasgow's 4. But obviously, this is still a big ask, you know, to beat a team like Glasgow who've been playing very well recently. And obviously, win with a try bonus point and deny Glasgow absolutely nothing. But it is exciting to know that Cell ultimately could finish, you know, anywhere between second or fourth going into the final round of the season. It does give the team a little bit of something to play for. So from your perspective, you know, knowing what we know about the competition, how it could shake out, what sort of team would you opt for on Saturday afternoon?
I think very similar to this week, to be fair. You know, I like that sort of blend of youth and experience, let's say, is a bit of a cliche in the sporting world. But, you know, I think there are some players. I think Curtis Langdon maybe coming in for Rob Webber would be quite interesting to see. We don't know what's happening with Acker, and he went off injured in the Quinns game, wasn't it? So be good to give Langdon some proper game time. But, you know, I think I'd like to keep that sort of structure to the team where we can compete. And, you know, Glasgow are a good team. But then I'd also like to see some of those more exciting players. I'd love to see James Williams again. I really think there's something there that can turn into a really, really good first-team player. I think perhaps Sam James has played quite a lot of rugby, so whether you consider resting him and using the fact that you've got James Williams as an inside centre to bring someone like Rohan or Luke James to outside centre. But yeah, I'd broadly stay the same. I don't think we're going to see Faf. He's in South Africa at the moment from a bit of Instagram stalking. So, you know, I maybe in the back row, Cam Neill, another player I'd like to see. I think you don't want to tinker too much and just put out a really weak side, but you do want to give players rest and not, you know, risk your frontline players for a game that ultimately is going to have no impact on our season. So, yeah, that's my sort of thoughts of a little bit of tinkering, maybe a little bit more youth and experience in that balance from last week, but still keeping the overall strength of the squad pretty high so we can allow those younger players to have a proper opportunity. What about you, Lewis? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think when the team make a deliberate decision to have such a young bench, for the La Rochelle game, it kind of clouds what options are actually available for us, because we don't know if that's made out of necessity or if it is by deliberate choice. Because you actually look at our front row, well, we've not seen Joe Jones all season. You know, Van der Merwe is injured. Morozov is now suspended, but obviously Kearney Oystason went off with injury at Bath. We're like, you know, are we playing Cal Ford out of choice, you know, on the bench, or is it out of necessity? So it's kind of difficult to say absolutely what options are available to us, but I kind of broadly agree that, you know, we kind of have to go for this first team squad player plus academy approach. We don't really have anything to lose. So, you know, there's no reason not to play some of our, you know, more exciting players. You know, James Williams has probably done enough to deserve another shot in the midfield. It'd be interesting to see if someone like Denny Solomona gets a run out at wing. You know, Simon Hammersley, another player who's been off injured recently, he might be able to make a return. It's kind of difficult to know where we stand with a lot of these players. But I think, you know, obviously, you can't play AJ McGinty, so Rob Dupree comes in at 10 for me. I'd probably keep Wilcliffe at 9 and probably just look for sort of small changes throughout. And, you know, I think Solomona at 14, for example, maybe Ashton at 15, depending on injury status. And then, in the forwards, I'd quite like to see both Dupree's play again, but I imagine we'll probably see Jean-Luc at 8, you know, give Dan a rest, you know, maybe look at bringing Jono back at 6, or potentially, like you suggested, playing someone like Cam Neill or even Sam Dugdale, who I know has played in the back row as well. You know, we kind of have a lot of options. We don't really know how many of them we can actually fall on, but I think given where we are in the competition, it kind of be a bit of a wasted opportunity not to go with the same approach that we did last week, which is play a strong team, but also give your academy, you know, some opportunities. I'd also definitely keep Matt Boss away in the second row as well. I think this game time has shown it's been really good for him. I think he's stepped up really well to being that sort of fourth sort of choice lock who can, you know, coming up from the academy, a bit like George Knott a couple of years ago, and getting some meaningful game time. So I'd definitely keep him in as well, and you know, let him get another 18 minutes under his belt.
Yeah, absolutely. Right then, I think it's probably time for some predictions then, is it?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I'll let you go first.
Thanks very much. Just to go on, last week I said it would be 28-23 to La Rochelle. Lewis, you said it would be 31-21 to La Rochelle, and James said 30-16 to La Rochelle. So it's probably between me and you. We were all correct with the result, and I think we were all fairly correct in how competitive Sale would be. This week, I think I expect us to beat Glasgow. Hopefully, we put a good team and at home with not a lot left to play for. I'm going to say Sale 23, Glasgow 12. What about you, mate?
I think if we have Sale's team from last week versus Glasgow's team from last week, I actually would fancy Glasgow to pull out an away win, given how good they looked against Exeter. That said, you know, they're second; they can't really, you know, they can't progress in the competition. I would presume that they're going to send out a pretty strong team, but maybe not one at their absolute peak. So with that in mind, I would suggest saying it's going to be really close, actually. I'm going to say Sale 21, Glasgow 17. I think it sort of feels like the type of game where a game line break from someone like Van Rensburg, if he plays, or Solomona, might ultimately be the difference, and it should be pretty close.
Well, I think that's everything for this week. I just guess to say thank you very much to everyone for listening, as always. It's always a pleasure, even in a loss, and it's quite nice to have a sort of positive loss to talk about, if anything, I guess. So thanks from me, Lewis. Thanks for being here and chatting through with me and remaining optimistic as a Sale fan, which is quite nice to come off a game like this. And I think we've found enough positives to keep us going until next week, certainly.
Absolutely. And anytime you're talking about Champions Cup rugby, I mean, let's just, you know, take a very quick step back and remember, you know, we are in the Champions Cup. We are competitive. We might finish bottom of our pool, but actually it's been a pretty entertaining sort of first five or six rounds of the competition. And, you know, I think it's fair to say Sale made a pretty good show themselves in the competition. And if nothing else, it's good to be back at Europe's top table. So on that very positive note, we'll leave everyone for another week. Thank you to everyone who sent us three-word reviews. Thank you to everybody who's been tweeting us over the weekend. Thanks to everyone who's been getting excited about Nadolo on Twitter. You know, it's really exciting to see Sale fans get back into a lot of off-field decisions as well. It means there's a very exciting feel around the club as always, even if that ultimately comes to nothing. And thank you to everyone who's tuned in. We had a really good week last week in terms of people listening. People love talking about wins, and although obviously we didn't have one on Friday night, we hope that there was enough positives, as Alex said, to make up for that. So thanks, everyone, and we'll speak to you next week.